I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 607. I use microtransactions to accessorize, not successorize. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Go gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi sis, what's up?
How you doing?
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good. It's pretty much good all the way around.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a mood. Like, good is a mood. Right now, it's a mood that I have, you know. The sun is shining, so I can't complain, really.
The birds go tweet-tweet, and I go tweet-tweet back. It's just how it is.
It's a thing. And there's just, like, so much news this week on so many fronts, on the anime front, on the video game front. Like, I almost don't even know where to begin. I mean, I'm going to, because I have some things I want to talk about, but, like, there's just a lot going on, you know. We're right at the beginning of, like, crazy-ass holiday, you know. So, game-wise, some things happened this week. Soul Calibur came out.
Yeah, I ain't got none of that just yet, so I got to wait.
It was a pay week for me, so I was like, woo, pay my mortgage. And I was like, all right, I got some pennies. What am I going to do with these pennies? But I'm going to jump right in. I got a full plate. Like, it's a meat plus some sides.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Then.
So, jumping right in, Soul Calibur 6. I gotta tell you, I expected to love the game. I do. Just flat out, if you enjoy good fighting games, then you should own Soul Calibur 6.
Okay.
Like, that's the short of it, for sure.
Are you gonna extrapolate?
Of course I'm gonna extrapolate. I'm going to, you know, elevate my statement. I'm gonna back it up with some facts just to get to the short of all the stuff. You know, it is a really good solid fighter. If you enjoy good solid fighters that'll, you know, require you to not just button mash, Soul Calibur 6 is great. It looks great. All the characters, you know, their movements are fluid. You know, ring outs are still a thing when you're setting up versus modes. You can determine whether or not you want to allow ring outs or not, which is knocking your opponent out of the ring, physically off the space of the ring in order to win.
Why did they incorporate this now? Why weren't they doing this when I was sucking?
I mean, here's the thing. They've pretty much been, for versus modes, letting you choose whether or not you want ring outs to be a thing for the last three games, but you haven't been playing the last three games, so you wouldn't know.
Yeah. You're right.
But it's still there, just like, you know, when you're setting up your versus modes, you can determine, you know, whether or not you want to have an infinite time or if you want to have a timer rundown. So you really can, you know, critique and set up, you know, games as you want them to be when you're playing, you know, with people, which is awesome. On the online mode, you can play ranked matches or you can play unranked matches. So you don't have to worry about, you know, if my skills are up to par to play with the world's greatest or not, which is fantastic, I think. The character roster is really good. Obviously, I have not unlocked all the characters yet because the game just came out on Friday. A lot of people were concerned with the game releasing on a Friday, but frankly, you know, with all the games that are coming out right now, it kind of makes sense to separate from some of the bigger games that are coming out on Tuesdays, the typical game release day for some reason. So I understand why Namco decided to make this a Friday so it could kind of stand by itself and hopefully get, you know, some good press, which there are quite a few people that were doing Let's Plays of the game, which was really cool to watch over the weekend, just to see, you know, how people differ from me. I watched some people playing on Mixer, and I watched some people playing on YouTube. None of my current favorite game streamers right now are playing the game on YouTube, so I just kind of had to search out some matches, but It was really interesting because I came across an article on Kotaku, of all places, which I don't typically read Kotaku very regularly. I do have some friends that work over there, but it's just not a place that I, you know, read a lot of stuff from. But I haven't done it yet, but their Create a Soul mode is still there. So the Create a Character mode that they've had pretty much since 4, I think. Yeah, I think it was Soul Calibur 4. Remember when you,
Mm-hmm.
I think you had a battle maid brigade, actually, if I remember correctly. You had like 3 or 4 different maids that fought with different styles, but all had the same maid outfit.
Yes.
But the way the Create a Soul works is that you basically pick what style of fighter you want to create. So within the game, you have your drunken masters, your straight kung fu, Shaolin style, you have sword masters, you have, you know, your brawlers, your Spartan type fighters, your ninja types that have different weapons, different speed, different strengths, and blocks. So you pick what first style of fighter you want, then you pick, you know, your sex, and then you can design the character using all of the different elements that exist in the game. So hairstyles from Kalik and Ivy and some other generic styles as well, and outfits, and you can create your own player, and then you can take that player into normal play modes. I haven't created a soul yet, but it was very interesting because the article that I was reading was highlighting some of the what they thought were coolest or most unique characters that people had started creating when the game launched on Friday. And it was very interesting to see some of the kind of pop culture references being created as characters really well. You know, one person made a Ronald McDonald fighter. Like, even got very close to putting, like, the Arches logo that they drew in on his chest. But he's a samurai-type brawler. Then someone made one off of a Lizard Man. Someone made a Wendy's character, which I'm like, Sassy Wendy absolutely belongs in this game. There were a collection already of people that were creating Bowsette knockoffs, which I don't ever want the Bowsette thing to die off. And as long as you're not at work, you can definitely do a search for Bowsette and just, like, marvel at the creativity of the community. But it was really interesting to see, you know, just how deep the creator player now is versus where it was the last time I used it, which was in the earlier game. Like I said, I think 4 was the last time that I, like, spent time creating a character, because I think they took it out in 5. I don't think the created character existed in 5. I could be wrong. It was really interesting just to see, like, how random people were. Like, there were, there's a whole Reddit, I mean, don't be surprised, but there's a whole Reddit string on just creating characters in Soul Calibur. And one guy made a really, really great looking approximation of Rock Lee, which Rock Lee from Naruto is probably my favorite character, because I just like the fact that, like, he was a fighter. Like, it wasn't about using jutsu or magic. He just trained his body really fucking well to be really fucking strong. It then went to a place where, like, and of course, you know, somebody on the internet ruins it because, you know, there's, it's a character creator, and I guess the Namco team really didn't think that people would, like, take it to a bad place, but of course they did. So somebody made a Lizard Man derivative with a ginormous penis, but gave the Lizard Man body type, Voldo's characters type, which, if you've ever played the game, Voldo is a tri-blade, a hand blade character that moves very snake-like, even in his walk. So he slithers in. And so, as you can imagine, taking those pronounced steps, leading with the hips, with a lizard character that has on no pants with a ginormous penis, you're always leading with your penis. And when I say made a penis, I mean with bowels. And the thing is, of course, erect and about the length of a leg. So that was not a video that I was prepared for. You have it. And then, of course, one of Voldo's moves, as you remember, he would do this taunt, sis, where he flung his arms back and basically did, like, a back bend, but did a sexy back bend.
Yeah, it was like, hey, if you haven't, like, seen my dick before, you certainly will now.
Right. So, as you can imagine, Yeah, that went to a bad place. So the saving grace for me in stepping back from that and being like, oh, Lord, maybe I don't want to get into this online, was that another character used the samurai style and created an outfit that basically looks like a Magikarp. Like a legit Magikarp. When the character arches back and does like the Yosemite, oh, I'm going to use my sword and fly at you thing, straight up looks like a fish, like the fish Magikarp coming at you. So I was like, that is mad creative. Like that took a lot of time of like testing, like, okay, did this line up right? Okay, great. And that's the attack it does. So now I can color it. And so it's got a crown and everything. So I really applaud like the more positive creative stuff as opposed to just like, you know, the toilet humor of like, this character has a huge dick. This character has huge boobs. So I'm just really kind of looking forward to trolling the thread on Reddit a little bit more to see what other cool creations for characters people come up with in the game. But that's definitely like an easy few hour waster on creating a character, because I love doing that in games. You know, we've talked about that before on the podcast of how much a good deep character creator adds to a game. And I think, you know, especially in a fighting game, where you can make a character, it makes it even more your own and the experience more your own when you can create your own fighter, you know, using the styles of characters that you enjoy, but designing like the look and the feel and the voice and, you know, some of the expressions that they make, you know, within the game. It really does add something to it, and it makes it less of a, oh, here's just like all the players I can play with. Now I can create one that's kind of mine, or two or three that are mine that, you know, speak to me, and I get to change the costumes and their hair and you know the moveset that they use, and so I can make a Killeague style fighting chick as opposed to, you know, just being stuck with Killeague, which is a good character, don't get me wrong, but like there's some characters I'm like, oh, I like your style, but I wish that it was a female character, or vice versa. I like your style, but I wish that it was in like a male character. And now I can build that, which is great. So I've been having fun with the game. I'm only a couple of hours in. I'm going to be spending a bunch of time in it. Trying to balance it and Odyssey is going to be a little bit difficult because I have so far to go on Odyssey. It's kind of ridiculous. But if you like fighters and if you've been missing a good balanced fighter right off the bat, definitely look at Soul Calibur 6. I feel like it is probably the best all-around fighting experience that we've had in a while from launch date. And I say that specifically because people are going to be like, Street Fighter is a great fighting game, and they use it in EXO. Stop. Street Fighter is a very good game, and it is a very good, very good fighter. But they messed everything up by putting so many characters behind a paywall and the microtransaction piece. And it took them a while to get the unlocks right and get the character moves balanced right and players balanced right. And if I have to come back to your game when you finally make it full versus when I paid full price up front and didn't have the full game to begin with, I got a problem with that. Like your core roster in your fighting game should always be available. If you want to add other characters on later that people can either work to unlock or buy to unlock, that's different. But when you don't make the entirety of your core roster available to begin with, that's a problem. When you put them behind a paywall, that's a problem.
Didn't Killer Instinct also do that?
Well, Killer Instinct had a two characters that you launched within its open beta. And then when they launched the game, they're like, hey, we're going to give you six characters. You can work to unlock these other ones, or you can buy the season pass that will give you these characters to begin with. But we're going to add more characters down the road. When we add more characters down the road, if you have the season pass, you have those characters. And those were additional characters. They weren't the core roster of characters.
Okay.
So that's why I give Killer Instinct a little bit of a pass. Like I said, if you want to release new characters down the road as part of DLC, that's fine, but your core roster should be available at launch. I shouldn't have to pay $5 a character to have the character. And right. If you're going to make them unlockable in gameplay, they need to be realistically unlockable in gameplay versus having to pay the $5. So if it's just complete the story mode with the core roster and these characters become available, that's fine. But if it's complete the story mode and then complete like six of these modes with this character, only ever losing less than this amount of percentage of health, and complete, you know, story mode using this character, only using high punches and guard, like those are not realistic. You're basically saying, oh, you want this other character? really the fastest and best and really only achievable way to do this and not throw your controller across the room is going to be to buy them. That's a problem. Because then you've taken the drive to be a better fighter out, because now it's just gimmicks. Can you do this gimmick? It's really hard, because once you take one hit, you have to restart again. Like, that to me is where you take a lot away from the game. And now it's just like gimmick, gimmick, gimmick. Or if you don't want to have to deal with the gimmick, give me $10 when I already paid for the game. Mm-hmm. Versus, here's your core 15 roster, right? And you can play with these characters to your heart's content. And if you want alternate costumes for these guys and the four characters that we're going to release in season two, get the season pass. That's different. Because I don't lose my core roster if I determine not to get the season pass. So you still leave me with, you know, for most games, between 8 and 12 players. That's enough diversity that even if I don't do the season's pass, I don't feel like I'm locked out of actually having the full game experience. But if you give me four characters and like, and you need season one in order to be able to get these other four characters and do story mode and play them, then what you've really done is that you've taken a core roster, put it in half, given me that as a game, and now you're forcing me to get the season's pass in order to get what was originally the core game experience. That's where I have a problem. And so that's why I give the little ding to Street Fighter. They eventually fixed it, okay, and they took all that out, and you could have the characters, and then alternate costumes, and then you earned things on top of that, hats and all that other kind of stuff. But, you know, they hobbled themselves a little bit in the beginning, and I think it's just because, you know, at the time, microtransaction was the big thing, and they went, oh, we can do all of this in microtransaction instead of dishing it up to begin with. And unfortunately, players were like, nope, this is just a straight money grab. And everyone went, oh shit, everybody realized this was a money grab. We gotta fix
Aren't
this.
Aren't all things money grabs, though? Like,
no, there's a tasteful way to do money grab, though.
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay, and that's really the thing, is like, do it tastefully. Don't just make it blatantly like, haha, we got your money and now we're going to get more money. I think that's really the thing that people object to so much in the paywall, is not to the idea of paywall by itself, but the instead of doing additional things on top of your core game mechanic experience and putting those things behind the paywall, it's when you take things out of the core game experience and put them behind the paywall as an obvious thing. Like, the Star Wars stuff with EA, they basically showed off the game Battlefront, and it's like, look, you can be Skywalker, you can be Darth Vader from this movie or from that movie, and you can battle people on Endor and Tatooine and all this kind of stuff. And everyone was like, yeah. And then you got the game, and it was like, hey, you can be this like random generic person from a battle. And if you want to be able to be Vader, well, you can put in about, I think, what was it? They worked it out. It was like 70 hours of effort into the game to unlock him. Or you just pay up front. That's a problem.
Yeah. That okay. is a complete problem.
That's where you took your core game and said, okay, now instead of making this available like I made it look like it was from the get-go, it's actually behind a paywall. Because most people, unless they really, really love the experience, they're not putting in that many hours into that game. Because there are other games to play. So you've basically deteriorated your core game and put part of it behind a paywall. It's like, you know, when people get upset about games and find that, like, DLC content that, you know, the company's been saying has been DLC for a long time is actually on disc. Means that it was shipped as the original part of the game, and you just decided to put it behind paywall.
Your work, there's a problem.
And that's where that's the non-tasteful money grab. Okay, I have no problem with things being behind the paywall, but don't make it that you've taken away from what was supposed to be core experience. And just went,
right.
Okay.
And then be like, no, I want more money for this. So if I take right. it out, people will pay for it because they're expecting to see it anyway for
right.
release.
Right. Versus the additional. Okay. Don't make my experience with the core lore or characters less without the paywall. The paywall should be in addition to. So here's your core gameplay. Here's your core experience. Now here's the stuff that we're going to add on later on. If you don't do these things, you still get the full core experience. That's how paywall should work. That's how microtransactions should work. This should be in addition to, not a replacement because we retarded something else, right?
Right.
As an example, you know, I talked last week about, you know, Helix credits inside of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Yeah. There's a whole section of things that these are like, these are time saver things. These are designed to save you time. You can get these things in game and you can get them, I don't want to say relatively easy, but in comparison to, you know, the big kind of sandbox world that it is, you know, you can discover treasures all on your own if you want to spend hours going through every building in a city. Or you can pay for Helix credits and for basically $3 buy the map that will show you where all those treasure chests are across the map for all your game saves that you do for the entire time you're in the game. So that is, in fact, a time saver. It's not that those chests don't exist in the world. It's not that you can't find them on your own without the maps, because you can discover treasure maps in cities themselves. Or if right out the gate you just want to know where they all are, you can pay the $3-4 to know that. So that's not retarding the game in order to get more money. So I don't have a problem with that. I myself did not buy the treasure map packs because the loot hunting outside of like core mission.
For me.
Right. So I don't really need that. Now, for somebody who really wants to be like a total completionist, $3 or $4 is probably worth it to them to have those maps right off the bat rather than discover them.
See,
so that you can plot your treasure.
As a completionist who, with certain games, will invest a lot of time into games. I don't think I've ever gotten to a point where I have used microtransactions to progress my pathing on my completionist run. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, granted, though, I feel like most of the games that I play don't present that as options for me, because, like, most of mine are my story-driven role-playing games, like my Dragon Quest and my Octopath Traveler. And, I mean, I think that would kind of break the whole...
Right. That wouldn't work in those games and their frameworks, the way that they're set up.
That's why I don't see them. Mm-hmm. But I think...
But, see, like, you didn't play Origin, and you didn't play... did you play Syndicate?
I didn't play Syndicate, but I played... Revelations.
Yep.
And the one after that.
Right. So in Revelations, you could buy maps. Remember, you could go to the vendor that you got, like, the stuff to upgrade your city, and you could buy maps that would show you for that particular city where all the treasures were.
Yeah. So, I mean, actually, I think in that regard, because I'm just trying to think, because I think for me, when I went through Revelations, and then I think 3 in particular, I wouldn't buy... Like, I don't think I got every single chest in, but I made sure I unlocked the whole map. Like, I got, I think for one of them, like, that, we need to go through those trials to get that really bomb-ass gear at the end.
Yep.
I do think I went and bought the maps for those so I could find them. But, like, I did the whole map. Like, I did all the Eagle Visions to unlock those. And, like, the big things for that. But I don't know if I've ever in my mind, like, right off the bat, been like, okay, so I'm going to get this game, and they're already giving me options to unlock all this stuff from the jump. Because then I feel like I would see the map and, like, be like, all right, I can just run here. And then it becomes more of a task to me, whereas at least in the way that I like to do it, like, I'm playing through the whole game, and I am naturally traveling through the world.
Right. And that's how I'm playing, you know, Odyssey right now. And so whatever chests I find, and I'm not completely critical pathing the game right now, but I'm very close to it. So I'm running like one or two side missions outside of like my core plot driving mission, just so I make sure that I'm leveling up enough. Once I complete the story, I probably will go back and buy the time saver to, like, show me all the chests, because then that will become, like, my next, like, okay, check off mission thing of, like, I do want to get all the loots. So, but it's not, like, at the beginning of my gameplay of this game, that's not something I'm looking for. Now, am I going to be able to, as I'm discovering the world, probably buy a bunch of those maps if I come across the right vendors or the right places? Yep. Am I going to do it at that point? Possibly, you know, and it may be as soon as the first time that I run into somebody who wants to sell me a map that's when I may go and do the time share and be like, no, I don't have to spend those credits there because I've already bought them like in the real world and I can just see them on my map. But that's a secondary thing to me. It's not a primary thing to me. And not having those at the beginning and discovering them through the world naturally, again, doesn't retard my core gameplay from onset. Okay, but if you instead put behind the paywall as one of those things to like get Helix credits was a thing that was like, you know, make this part of the map visible and that particular part of the map had a character that was core to like advancing the plot and I could only get that character or even know that that part of the map existed by buying that thing as opposed to being able to like discover it on my own on the map, that's different. And so that's where I kind of draw the line of what's okay with a microtransaction, what's okay as far as like a DLC thing, that's okay for me. Where I can justify being like, yeah, it's worth spending the money because you added on something new to the game. You know, it's like Destiny, you know, seasons, right? When they add on a DLC pack and they're like, hey, pay us this money for it, it's not like they took an area that they already had open and just now filled it with people and missions. They've built a whole new section world. Like the map gets redrawn, new planets pop up, whole new character models show up. Yes, the weapons are pretty much the same, but there's only so many, you know, tweaks that you can make to an existing weapon base, right? But they do create a whole new world, a whole new experience, new bad guys. That's all new content. That wasn't content that already existed in the map. It wasn't like I could just pick a spot on the map and say, go to here, and all of a sudden be like, yeah, there is a planet here. You can go there. Like, they are adding on new. And so I feel like that is justified additional for-cost content. And so I'm okay with DLC like that. And I'm okay with season passes like that. And I'm okay with microtransactions that are like, hey, even if you don't want to get this whole DLC pack, if you want to be able to play like this raid that's in this pack, but you don't want to get the whole thing, you can pay for this and just get that piece. I'm okay with that kind of additional, you know, behind the paywall type content. But when it's just like, oh, yeah, this boss is in the game, but if you want to actually want to get to the boss, you got to pay to get to that boss. Otherwise, you're just going to come to this section. And it's going to be like, yeah, he's out right now. But actually, he's in the office. It's just that you got to pay to unlock the character to be able to be like, okay, here's the door. It's your own doom. Like, that's a problem. And that's just a classless money grab. And those I don't support. So, you know, I think that Soul Calibur 6 is really balanced. I like the character, the soul creation mode. I can't remember. Is it Geralt or Geralt? Is it a soft G or a soft, hard G in his name from the Witcher? Because, like, I hear different people say it different ways, and so now I'm not sure anymore. I'm like,
I think I've heard it both ways, too.
Yeah.
I think I heard the harder one more than the softer one.
Okay, so for this episode, I'm going to say Geralt. Geralt is a beast. I don't care if you don't know how to like use a character well in a fighting game. Just use Geralt. You'll be fine. You will kick everyone's ass. Like, he is so OP. It's ridiculous. Especially when the computer is Geralt. Oh my god.
Like, he just be spanking you? Like,
just spanking. Like I stole something and lied about stealing it. Just like, oh, this is the game we're playing? I don't think so. Just, I've had my ass handed to me repeatedly by Geralt, so.
It's like, I'm your daddy.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how that works. Yeah, pretty much. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yes. Also, yep, and yes.
And also, yes, sir.
And also, yes. Yes, sir. That's the correct one. So, that. The only other thing that I really want to talk about, there are two pieces, really, is one is the news with Funimation. Did you hear the announcement that they made earlier this week, sis?
No, I've heard some pretty sad ones, though. Like, I heard them not going forward with this third season of Luke Cage on Netflix. We're not getting that no more now.
Yeah, and, well, those are to be expected because, you know, Marvel is Disney's now, and Disney is getting ready to release their big old streaming service. So they had already said that after, I think it was Ant-Man and Wasp, no new Marvel movies would ever come to Netflix.
Yeah.
So they...
I mean, Luke Cage was their show, though. But
it was Netflix's show, but they licensed it from Marvel. Like, they're Marvel characters. So that's part of the reason why Iron Fist got killed, because it wasn't because they weren't performing.
That's what they're saying is the reason for Iron Fist.
Well, I mean, Iron Fist probably should have been killed for other reasons. But basically, ABC is taking their content back. And so, you know, they're going to want those things on their streaming platform as destination content and not have it in other places like Netflix. So,
like, hey guys, you know how we don't like monopolies? Well, guess what? If you didn't like the game, you're certainly not going to.
People keep thinking like Monopoly is a good idea until they start feeling the repercussions. And those repercussions are now being felt across streaming platforms because Disney's taking their content back.
Everyone's like, I'm not playing in your sandbox anymore. I have my own.
So, like, screw you. Which is why, you know, Netflix is scrambling so hard to create so much unique original content because they can't rely on licenses because, you know, you have a big chunk of licenses now that are coming back. You know, ABC has ILM, they have Lucas, and they have Marvel. Man, so
this
no new Star Trek stuff. Like, so that includes all the animated stuff. You know, AT&T buying Warner, that's where, you know, people are feeling the hurt on other places. You know, the Funimation thing that I wanted to talk about was, you know, Sony bought Funimation and Funimation's contract, you know, Funimation is no more. Sony has decided that, you know, they want to pull all their content into one place because they want to have something that's viable. I don't know why they're trying because don't nobody pay attention to Crackle.
Yeah.
But they're going to try and make it a thing.
Drama fever.
Well, don't worry about it. It's gone. But that's, again, part of the AT&T thing because, you know, Sony has pulled Funimation. Their contract with Crunchyroll was up, I want to say, like at the end of this month, the end of October. And so they're not renewing. So Funimation stuff is going back to Funimation for a short period of time. I'm sure it's going to get rolled into whatever Sony's big thing is going to be. I don't know that it's going to be Crackle or they're going to announce something new that is, you know, Crackle plus Funimation plus the other service that they purchased. That was a content streaming service. So you've got that as a thing. So they haven't said yet specifically when the period is up at the end of the month, which Funimation things are going to be leaving Crunchyroll, just because it's really murky with Funimation because there's so many independent things that had their own contracts for how long they were going to be simultaneously streamed on both platforms. So there's no like definitive list that as of October 30th, this is what you won't be able to find on Crunchyroll anymore. That was originally, you know, Funimation content. Supposedly, Funimation is going to focus and double down in its restructuring to do sub and dub.
Oh.
Yeah. As opposed to just dub. You know, because that was their big lead thing was, you know, Funimation had pretty much the group of voice actors that did U.S. English-speaking dubs for many licensed anime. That was kind of like their claim to fame. But they're supposedly going to be doing sub and dub and bringing over some unique content that Sony had licensed outside of the purchase of Funimation to bring some, you know, Funimation exclusives to the platform, probably in both formats. So it'll be worth keeping an eye on for sure. If you were one of the people that, you know, dropped your Funimation and separate Crunchyroll accounts and got a single merged Funimation account, well, you're going to be split back out again. So you probably want to decide like which way you want to go. If you want to do both, it's up to you. I actually never merged my Funimation and my Crunchyroll account because I think always in the back of my mind had it that like at any point in time, something's going to happen. And one of these guys is either just going to flat buy out the other one or they'll split again. So I always kept my little $5 a month Funimation separate from my $7 a month Crunchyroll because I'm grandfathered in, bitches. It was just sad to hear the news, especially because, you know, as you said, it came during a week where I started to hear about different series that I like watching on Netflix, you know, wouldn't be continuing on Netflix, that they were going to be up in the ether. You know, you mentioned Drama Fever, which is where I watch, where we watched a lot of K-dramas. And because AT&T did the Warner purchase, and Warner was behind Drama Fever, that basically shuttered on the 16th with a bunch of, you know, exclusive content that was just in the middle of production actually be putting on hold, because that content's all going to be wrapped into AT&T's new streaming service platform. So, you know, it's just monopolies reorganizing their assets. And on paper, that sounds fine. But there's now a bunch of content that I've been watching on different platforms that's now up in the air.
Right.
And, you know, as a user, that leaves a nasty taste in my mouth. As the consumer, as the person paying for these services, to have them just up and stop with no timeline to when they will be back and where they will be and what that cost will be, that's a whole lot of questions to leave in my mouth that makes me now feel like, oh, well, if any point in time you're going to do me like this and just turn off in the middle of the night and I don't get any warning, maybe when you light up your new service, maybe I just won't go there, because you could do the same thing with this new service. Like, if there's another merger and acquisition, like, it could just stop on a no place and I'm left in the middle of, like, a series that I was invested in, or
I just got adopted, and now my adopted parents are separating, and now I'm going back into the system. Well, you know,
right.
Leave me in the system till I age out then.
Right, 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 right. Don't do that. Adopt.
I'm done with this bullshit. I'm like, done in believing in people. And by people, I mean my streaming services.
Yeah, don't do that. Adopt. Adopt. Always adopt. Don't let the kids go to the system. Yeah, so that was just, like, really weird news out of no place. I've been watching a bunch of series, several of which I know specifically came over because of Funimation, including the new Code Geass.
Oh, you and your Code Geass.
You need to watch it. But there's a new OVA that popped out, and then a new Sword Art. And I was like, what the shit? How many times can I go back into some, like, VR thing with Kirito? Didn't he learn his lesson after the Gunslinger one? Evidently no.
Apparently not.
Evidently
no.
He saw the
hole and he's like, let me get in this.
Yep. Yep. And just
some
jumping again.
Just don't learn.
Like, you got trapped in there one time. You only got to teach me think something one time, and then I learn, and
I
then
mean,
I'm out.
It might take me two times, but that third time, I'm not getting in that hole. I know better now.
Right. You learned it.
I'm a little slower on the uptake.
It happens. It's okay. But at least, you know, you eventually pick it up.
Eventually, I learned a lesson. My hands might be scarred, but you know what? I'll always remember where I got them scars from. Unlike
Ooh. The Joker remembers where he got the scars. He's just not telling people.
He's not telling anybody.
He's not telling anybody the truth.
That he was in a bad raking accident when he was a kid because he thought it would be funny to jump on the rake, but he jumped on the rake the wrong way.
Okay, that's one story. So the last thing I have to share, and then it's all you, sis, is an announcement that I really wasn't expecting, and it really kind of surprised me. So,
and I'm not pregnant.
No, it's not that. Because I'm kind of sort of expecting that. I just don't know when it's going to drop. It's like the hottest album of pick a year. Like, that's really all I'm waiting for is, like, when is Detox really happening? Like, that's basically how I look at your...
When I get pregnant, you're going to have to watch an episode of Empire on Fox because Lucius is going to just randomly say it.
Right. Right.
By the way,
as soon as he turns Howard, he's just going to turn the camera and be like,
character?
Amanda's pregnant. And I'm just like, ah! So anyway.
It's going to be in the hot track. He's going to be like, yeah, my cousin's girl, she pregnant. Throwaway line. It's going to be really funny.
Please have Felicia Rashad deliver it. Anyway, so.
She's back. Are you in this current season?
Yo, we'll talk about it offline. Anyway, because the answer is yes.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to talk about, again, was an announcement that I wasn't expecting. I was kind of surprised about. As you guys know, some of my favorite YouTubers, as far as gamers on YouTube, are Markiplier and Jacksepticeye. I enjoy both of their channels tremendously. And they both put up videos this week with them looking directly to camera as the thumbnails. I'm like, what's up? Because, like, one of them was like, this is it. And the other one was like, the time is now.
And
I was like,
they fell in love and they're getting married.
No.
Damn it.
Stop it.
I said unexpected
announcement.
Oh.
So
one of them is transitioning and having the other's baby.
No. Okay. Again, unexpected announcement. They've
They're
started
a video game.
They've started a clothing brand. So evidently, the two of them, Sean and Mark, have been working for the last 2 years on creating a clothing brand. The clothing brand is called Cloak. And their stories are that they basically wanted to create, you know, clothing that they would actually want to wear. Like the comfortable stuff, the high quality stuff, t-shirts, hoodies, and all that good stuff that, you know, were a little bit of a nod to the community and the culture, but like weren't the overstated, crazy, over the top stuff. So like Muster brand basically, but a little more reserved, right? So super high quality.
I'm not too surprised to hear this, honestly, because I mean
I am. Like I didn't expect the two of them to like of all the announcements that I would expect the two of them to be like, this is our joint company thing that we've been working on for a couple of years and we're excited to bring it to the forefront. Like I would imagine that it was like an incubator for, you know, creators. Like, you know, because Mark bought that big production space and like Jack was here for like 3 months. Like I thought Jack had moved here. Right?
No, I don't think he, I don't think.
No, he was just here for 3 months. But like, I thought that that was like the thing. Like, they finished the space and like, they were making this big combined like content creating company. And like, they were going to work with lower content creators and then themselves. And they had all these editors and studio space. And, you know, Mark was going to continue doing some more of his long form stuff, like Who Killed Markiplier and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's what I expected if you know,
I mean,
just as
I'm
tight
not, I'm not
as that group
to
is.
It, though. And I mean, and I think this is.
But clothes, really? Like, tell me, because I'm still like.
I
support it, but I'm just like, clothes?
Here's
really?
What I think I feel I'm seeing happen in the YouTube space. So I mean, with all the drama, and I'm even putting that in a little subfolder because that doesn't really pertain to much, but you know, YouTube itself is a chimera. It is this platform which for most people starts out as X and has turned into like several different letters in the alphabet. And then randomly a blender in the corner. And, like, there are so many people who are trying to find ways to evolve and grow from the platform. And, I mean, I think all of the creators that we have, I don't want to say grown up with, but, I mean, obviously as the years go, you grow, they grow.
Oh, you've grown to love.
Like, that we jump into and we've mm-hmm. been, like, you know, subscribed to for years. Like, we've seen a lot of burnout happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, within, I'd say, at least the last 2 to 3 years, we've seen so many of the big ones. Like,
yeah, because of all the monetization crap changes that YouTube's
right.
made.
Like, the
That's why we're not on it.
Stuff and, you know, but I think at that time, a lot of people, like, when things were being demonetized and, like, the income that they were used to getting was mm-hmm. changing and shifting and, you know, being less, that a lot of these creators were like, well, I need to start thinking about what my next steps are going to be. Because
True.
While I love doing this, this might not be as, you know, sustainable.
Financially sustainable, yeah.
You know, in the future. And I mean, and that's why you see, like, and I mean, like, a lot of the beauty gurus, like, at least, you know, the ones who really do it and do it well, like, have lines out. And have been working with really, like, working with top, you know, makeup brands, and some of them have even gone independent and do their own thing. I'm not going to name mm-hmm. any names, but there are some who have branched out that way. And I mean, like, you have Joey Graceffa, who I don't watch, like, I'm not subscribed personally, but I will watch one or two of his things. And I mean, and I did get a YouTube Red account because of Escape the Night,
uh-huh.
which was his passion project, and like, it's a murder mystery type thing, and he gets YouTubers, and I enjoy that. I wanted to invest in that. But I mean, he, you know, his writing books, and I mean, not like, you know, books about himself, like he's doing a young adult or like young kid adventure type book mm-hmm. that he did. And he has a jewelry line. So, I mean, like, they're all trying to find other ways to become substantial, like lucratively and financially stable for when, you know, they can't do the video thing anymore. And it's not even like they aren't committed to doing it anymore. But I just think, one, the audiences are shifting, you know, and, you know, all those young, you know, 6 to 18-year-olds who, you know, follow the Pauls and all that drama and stuff, like, they're starting to get older. And I mean, they may eventually, you know, leave those staples and, like, just completely kind of fall out.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think of it in that respect, but you do bring up a good point, you know, because the revenue split changes that YouTube made and the changes that they made to their algorithm of, you know, who sees videos and who doesn't, you know, definitely cut into, you know, heavily into especially the larger YouTubers' numbers and into their ultimate, you know, additional revenue. So I guess, you know, it doesn't surprise me, and I don't want to say I guess, it doesn't surprise me that they would come up with another, you know, venue, another business, you know, that could be a profit center for them, just because so many things have cut into their profit center. You know, if you're not putting out content daily on YouTube, and if you are not keeping your audience engaged enough to watch those videos through to fruition, to see those ads, you don't have that ad revenue coming in, you're not getting served up to people regularly, you know, that does feed into your revenue. And when you're used to on a monthly basis a certain amount of dollars coming in, and now half, if not a quarter of that is now coming in, you've got to supplement that somehow if you're going to continue to fund your passion. Like, I get that. I understand that from a business perspective completely. You know, I think where I was surprised, and then after listening to you talk, I'm like, I should have been less surprised. It does make sense that in all those things, the thing that could be, you know, a solid regular revenue provider that would make sense for the two of them to be focused on outside of just, you know, content creation would be clothing, because they're always wearing clothes in their videos. So that's an easy thing to market. You know, having good quality, comfortable, cool looking clothes is something that, you know, everybody in our community and in the gaming culture wants. You know, there are, you know, there's like, you
it's,
know,
it's definitely something far more viable. I mean, like case in point, like Nerdy Nummies, like she's a baking show. So of course, like for her to go and decide that she wants to do a cooking line, one, makes sense, because it lines up in her brand. But like, it's always something that people have to do. People have to cook. People have to bake. So like, and I've seen some of her things in like my local Michael's. So I'm like, so there's opportunity there.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I think it's strategic.
You know, as I sit here and I think about it more, you know, and talking with you, it is a very good strategic move, because, you know, apparel is, frankly, easy to produce, you know, and comes with a high markup that people are used to. Like, you know, as far as Muster Brand goes,
in a market that they're not generally in, because yes, they do content creation. I mean, and yes, like their start was, you know, video game Let's Plays and stuff like that. So now they've got that revenue coming in. But then with this launch of this line, like if this line is successful and they ever decide they wanted to branch out into, you know, the bigger department spaces, like you could see this, you could see their articles of clothing like at, you know, a Kohl's. Or,
yeah, I wouldn't necessarily put it in Kohl's, because again, it is higher end stuff. So like,
I'm just saying that
the hoodies are $80
right now. But just think. Like if it launched,
they're gonna stay.
Like they could have their own production company and their own like they could do that, but they could get to a point where they have all these different businesses, very much like, you know, like with Disney being the parent company. Like there are so many smaller things that Disney has had a hand in developing that people are not aware that Disney is actually like the keeper of. You know, like everyone was so crazy about, you know, Epic Rap Battles, which I really wish one day they would come back.
Well, Lloyd and
Lloyd.
Yeah, and Lloyd and what's his Lloyd and Peter. They did a video, I want to say like 9 months ago, where they said like they are going to come back.
Right. But like they gotta sort themselves out and do.
No, they said they have they actually did a video where they're like, we've sorted this stuff out. They were sitting together, I think in Lloyd's place, and like explained like, so here's what happened, because like, Lloyd had a baby and like we were having all this stuff and like we figured it out, but we're in a good place. And so what we're going to say like is we don't have the date yet, but we're in a good place and we're coming back. So, right.
But I'm just saying, like everyone, like I remember like when on YouTube, like the biggest thing was every freaking Wednesday, that new Epic Rap Battles, and people were like hungry for it, you know? And then, you know, people were starting putting two and two together, because the production house that they were working in and their contracts at the company that they were, like, using and stuff, is owned by Disney.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, when you think Disney, you don't think about all those little, you know, octopus arms out in the world, but mm-hmm. Disney influences a lot of stuff that the base consumer is not aware of.
Well, I mean, like, for me, like, it the flag went up for me when they started getting, like, named talent in episodes.
Like, when all of a sudden Snoop Lion shows up, you're right. Like, fuck!
Yep.
No, but I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. So for these content creators who, you know, have established their own brands, have their own audiences, like, this would be the ideal time for, you know, for you to jump into other things that could help solidify you because, you know, you never know. Tomorrow, might put a 1 or a 0 in this algorithm and then mm-hmm. nobody's videos are being monetized.
Right.
Or, you know, the guidelines for ads, you know, for sponsors and stuff are going to come in partnerships. I shouldn't say sponsors because it's mm-hmm. partnerships.
Yeah,
the right words and whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they might start restricting their guidelines as to what content they want to put their ads to, which also could take a big hit to these content creators who've been doing this for, you know, years.
Yeah.
You know, so like this would be the time to, you know, start investing in other things that you could be investing all that capital in.
Yep.
You're
absolutely right. Like, you know, you have to diversify.
Most of these are young kids. Like, these are people who are younger than I am,
mm-hmm.
who are their own financial machine.
Yeah.
Like, so there's a YouTuber that I like to watch a lot, Simply Nail Logical, which is funny because in most cases I don't even grow nails. I usually go to a place and have some lady put on acrylic tips for me.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Christine and she's out in Canada. And like, she was doing nails for fun, like legit has a day job, still has a day job, but still does YouTube. And her nail tutorials are amazing. And she is funny as all get out. Like, I really would like to be friends with her, like in real life.
Was she the one that did the 100 coat challenge?
I think she was the first one, not okay. the first one to do it, but she's just really funny. And like, she makes a lot of commentary about, you know, the state of YouTube and also BuzzFeed. She seems to have a thing about BuzzFeed, but the thing about her that I like is, one, how genuine and authentic she is.
Mm-hmm.
But she always often talks because she's like, you know, guys, like, this is not, like, my day job. Like, she has a 9-to-5 job. She's a criminal analysis person
mm-hmm.
for the Canadian government. And that's her 9-to-5. And, like, and she does that. And she does YouTube at the same time. And I think this is the first time, really, that I think a YouTuber has ever really kind of announced that, because most times they say, yeah, I was able to leave my job and do this full time.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of her videos, she literally was like, you know, like, and her boyfriend of 5 years, Ben, who's often in a lot of her videos, like, he's also a criminal analysis person. That's how they met. He's like, we're not saying that this is not a lucrative, this hasn't been lucrative for us, because it absolutely has been. But, you know, this is not like we got scouted by YouTube, there's a contract that we signed, and we're guaranteed X, Y, or Z
right.
in salary. Like, we both wanted to have something to fall back on, you know, and make this like a passionate hobby that also, you know, pays us more than our actual jobs. But the stability of it is just not something that we as analysts have ever been able to be like, oh yeah, this is far more stable
right.
than this. So until that happens, or even if it doesn't, they have that backup. And I'm like, how fucking smart is that?
Yeah.
You know, and they talk about all these young creators who, like, had that 1 or 2 viral video and, like, have been doing this for their whole lives. And if this were to be pulled from underneath them.
Right. Like,
they didn't. Google
could shutter. Not that they would necessarily do it because it's still a profit center for them, but they could shutter YouTube. With, you know, just like Drama Fever was shuttered with, like, no pre-warning that, like, this is gone.
And then there goes all these young kids who are now living in fabulous houses, who have so many employees underneath them. And all of that could just go in the snap of, like, in a Thanos snap could go. You know, and, I mean, right now, the getting is good. But, you know, the oil is deep now. But eventually, there might be a time where that oil might run out.
Right. And so, you know, again, to your point, I agree that, you know, you have to approach this as a business. And anybody that's been in it, you know, as long as Mark or Jack, and really anybody that's thinking about getting into it where they're like, at the end of the day, I want to be a content creator and I want that to be like my job, my thing that I do, that you have to approach it like a business. And so you do have to diversify. I completely am on board with that. And I agree with that 100%. I think initially I was like, why clothes? Like, that's the thing that I wasn't able to make the connection for the two of them, because there's so many other things that, like, I personally would think of first, but I think
I'm actually kind of glad.
To your point,
I mean, apparel, I think one is smart because it's just something that everybody utilizes.
Right.
You know, and if it's not like, you know, merch with their faces on it, because I mean, like,
it's not.
If right. And I'm just saying that there's a difference in that because, you know, you can have your Markiplier and Jacksepticeye merch, which I'm sure they both do.
Yep.
But this could be like a separate, stable, everyday brand. Like,
right.
I could go, like, I could get like a sweatshirt and it'd be like a durable sweatshirt that I'll wear every day. And I mean, like, I might not wear my Markiplier hoodie every day. I mean, I don't have one and I also don't know if he has a sweatshirt. But like, I'm just saying that like having their presence in the world without it having to be that persona's presence. Well, it's smart on a business sense.
It is very smart, especially because the way that it was announced was that it was Cloak Brands. And the first thing that they were announcing was the Cloak Brand apparel. So, you know, to your point, I think there's probably a lot of plans to do other things underneath the Cloak Brand.
I'd imagine with the name of Cloak, that's all encompassing. We might see other things come out of,
The brand. So it's starting with apparel, but probably, you know, depending upon the success of the apparel, probably branch out into other things that, again, are not necessarily tied to one identity. Very, very smart. Very smart. You know, as this conversation's gone on, I'm like, yeah, you know what? This is absolutely, like, the absolute right thing for them to do. I mean, I took a look at the merch, and I was like, it's mostly logo apparel right now for Cloak, but it's very subtle, cool stuff, and you look at the products, they are definitely high quality things. Jack did a video where he was wearing a hoodie. Mark did a video where he was wearing a hoodie, and then they did one of their pole dance videos where they were both wearing Cloak tees.
I find that, in all honesty, that you say, oh, like, all of a sudden now, like, they're wearing this merch. It's like, no. I bet if you looked through further videos.
Oh, yeah, this is.
That there's a good chance that they have both been sprinkling it throughout several videos, because I mean, I think this is a strategy that I've kind of seen happen a lot.
Well, they weren't like Cloak apparel, but I have a feeling that like when Jack,
they were, like,
I think
test,
it was like a
like
month
they were
ago,
test t-shirts.
Yeah, I think like because like a month ago, Jack announced new PMA Positive Mental Attitude t-shirts, and he was going on and on about how much he liked the quality of and things like that. That's probably a line that actually Cloak is going to be releasing, and created, and like Mark's been wearing some different t-shirts that, you know, were kind of cool looking, but were a little, you know, unassuming. So to your point, more than likely they've been like wearing things just to see like what reactions they got to those things.
Like, but if all of a sudden a bunch of like people were commenting like, man, you know, in the pole dancing videos, like, man, that shirt looked really comfortable while you were doing that back aerial or like whatever the fuck. But
hey, doing sexy butt.
But I'm just saying that, like, mm-hmm. I'm sure they've been testing it out for a while. But now that they're like, oh, we have the blends that we want, we have the formulas that we want, we have the designs that we want, and we're moving forward with this. And now they're able to discuss that. But I mean, I think this is that strategy of slowly seeping it through their videos is definitely something that you see on YouTube on a constant mm-hmm. basis.
Yeah, and it's a smart. It's a very smart move. That's how you gauge, I mean, you know, your consumer interest, right?
Rihanna did it with her makeup, and I have to give Rihanna and her team like some serious.
I mean, just clap it up for Rihanna.
I mean,
just in general.
I am just generally, but I'm just saying, like, one of her eyeshadow palettes, she did. I think I don't remember what video it is, but she did this amazing look in this video with this like beautiful blue shadow thing going on her face, and everyone's like, what is she wearing? And like nothing happened. And then when Fenty Beauty came out and then this eyeshadow palette came out, guess what was in the middle of that fucking palette? That blue that she wore that people were like commenting about.
Mm-hmm.
So like the presence of it, like the breadcrumbing of it is a smart way for one of engagement, and putting it in a media like out in plain sight, hidden in plain sight is genius.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to wrap it up because I want to make sure that you have enough time to talk about your stuff in that. If you want to check out the stuff, you can go to cloakbrand.com. Everything's in pre-order right now. The line actually launches, I think, November 19th. And supposedly, like, the pre-order's been going pretty well. I bought Soul Calibur, so I can't buy anything right now. But I'll be honest with you, they have two hoodies that I really, really like. And I like what I love the most right now about the website is that not all the models are skinny bean poles. So they have like a chunkier dude showing off one of the hooded sweatshirts, both a zip up and a pullover, and describe like how tall everybody is and what size they're wearing. So you can like see, you know, kind of what sizing looks like. And most of their sizes on things go up to 3X. So they are considering not just the skinny and pretty in the community, but also those of us who are a little bit more on the plump side, which I appreciate, and also showing that. And, you know, all the models, they're really cool looking people, but they're not like models. So I appreciate that it's like serving up realness. So again, that's cloakbrands.com. Check them out. Do what you want to do. I'm probably going to order a hoodie at minimum because I really like the way that the dark cloak hoodie looks. That's all I have for this week. What about you?
Okay, so on the last episode of this show, I talked about the Friday the 13th game and how, you know, if you were in the Halloween spooky spirit and wanted to play like a scary game, like this would be one that one was free and like you could play with your buds and be scared with your buds. So I kind of want to continue that trend a little bit right now and tell you that the PlayStation Network, the store, has put several more scary games up there. Now, unfortunately, not for free, but on sale. So I thought I would talk about a couple of them.
Spooky discount.
Spooky, the sales keep falling. Ooh. And if you're on a budget but want to get your spook on, this could be something for you. So there were about, I think, 7 or 8 games that got reduced in price. There's only a couple of them that I kind of want to talk about. But if you're curious about them and you have a PlayStation, you can go in the store and you can find the other ones. So, one, I don't think any spooky holiday announcement for me wouldn't be one if I didn't talk about Resident Evil. And luckily, they decided to put Resident Evil 7 available on the PS4 for a reduced price. So it is currently, for PS Plus people, like $19, regularly about $22, and like the full-on regular price was like $30. And I would strongly advocate, if you do not get sick, VR style, like some people, which granted, I've actually been taking some positive strides in my VR lately. I actually think I might pick this up in VR and play it in my head. I don't know how smart that is, but I might just do it and see. But that is available. Also, if very much in the vein of the Friday the 13th, if you're looking for something close to your horror roots, there's a VR game, The Exorcist, Legion, and you can actually play the full thing for, if you want to buy it, you can buy it for $27 generally, but if you're a PS Plus member, you can get that for $24. And then, because I really do miss me some Until Dawn, I still need to get that from my friend because I lent it to them and I know they're never going to play it, but I miss it because I have it on disc. When I first heard that Supermassive Games was going to do another Until Dawn, I was really eager until I initially heard that it was going to be VR only, because at that time I had had my horrible VR experience with Elite Dangerous.
Yeah,
I was like, I won't be able to play this, and I wonder if this is going to tie into the actual Until Dawn or not. But the Until Dawn Rush of Blood, which is the VR only Until Dawn. Well, I mean, I don't think you can play the actual Until Dawn in VR. I don't think it has capabilities, but the Rush of Blood is pretty much a rail shooter that takes the player through the mind of, oh god, I can't remember, is Josh. There it is. And if you've played Until Dawn, then you know who Josh is, and you know why that would make sense, that we're going through the mind of Josh throughout the events of, because I think this is all happening in his head during the events of the actual game, so it is happening in tandem too. I'm not sure. But this was one of the ones that I actually did buy and do have for VR and do plan to put myself into the PS4, PSVR headset and actually engage in a little bit. I'm stealing my resolve to do that. If you are not a PS Plus member, that goes for about $10. If you are, you could get it for about $8. And generally, if you were going to pick this up on disc, not too sure why you would do that, you'd be paying about $15 for it. So there's several other games that went up for sale that are also kind of spooky, like Dead Secret It's fairly cheap. It's under $10. The Brookhaven experience is under $6. Like, there's some good spooks out there for generally inexpensive. So if you're looking for some scares on the cheap, you could probably find some of these similarly across the board over in the Xbox land, but I've just been living PS4 life a lot recently. So there's that. So keeping some horror in your day. And then lastly, so there's a game that I haven't played yet, but I'm going to play. And it actually is a VR game. And I know I've talked up and down on this show about my horrible experiences with some VR and how I never thought I was ever going to really venture into the space. I first jumped into the kiddie pool with the Job Simulator game, which I know is fairly old and a lot of people have already played it and no one really wants to care about my experience with it, but I was able to play it and enjoy it and not get sick.
Yay.
Okay. So, and I was able to stand up while playing it. So, like, I don't necessarily have to sit. So I'm still venturing through finding out the things that do make me nauseous versus the things that don't. The game I'm talking about, and I'm only going to talk about briefly because I still haven't even really stepped into it, but I'm extremely excited for my first impression of it, is a game that has come out, downloaded today. I think it came out earlier last week, I think around the 18th or the 17th. And the game is called The Invisible Hours. And
okay.
The reason why I bring this up is because, do you remember a game, you know, that I played called The Sexy Brutale?
Yes.
So it's from the same folks.
Okay. All right. Sexy Brutale was also a really good game.
Yes. Which, I mean, and in that game, you played as a character who was stuck in a time loop and is trying to prevent the deaths of all the other guests in the house and trying to figure out what and or who is orchestrating the murders. And like, it actually had a really deep story, and I remember, because I believe we got a review copy of that, which is what led me to play it. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely loved it and spent a whole day, like literally spent 20 hours playing through the whole game because I wanted to go through all the scenarios and figure it all out and just how thoughtful and meticulous it was. And when I saw Tequila Works pop up, I was like, ooh, they're doing another one. And very much in the same vein, The Invisible Hours is a murder mystery that you get to involve yourself in. And it's a completely immersive cinematic experience from, you know, the tagline that they gave me. And I saw some trailers and stuff for it. And from what I've been reading about it, the player is actually completely invisible to all of the characters, because I don't want to say NPCs in this case. So I don't know if necessarily the player is like an aberration or a spirit of some kind, but the character has full range to go wherever they want in this world. So they can follow characters and see what those characters are doing. They could even just not follow the cast at all and just walk around the space and find other things that may or may not lead the character to solve the murder. Because there is a murder that happens in this, and actually I think it centers around Nikola Tesla. And
okay.
I believe someone murders Nikola Tesla. And there's a detective there who's trying to figure out why. And they find out that Nikola Tesla has a blind servant in the house, like a blind partner. And like in the trailer, like the detective guy's like, why would he hire a blind assistant? And the blind assistant is also a man of color, which I actually strongly appreciate. And he's just like, so I can keep his secrets because I have never seen anything. And it's like genius. And like, I'm ready to dive into it because, I mean, I already know that Tequila Works has a good track record with being able to weave in multiple stories all very well and balance a really good murder mystery type thing where things don't seem nearly as predictable as you're expecting them to be. And like the cast of character looks very diverse. It looks like they're not all cookie cutter, you know, with the same traditional backstory. It seems like they're all very, like, I don't think any of them are overtly like, I'm a good person and I will always do the right thing. I think they're all kind of muddled and dirty in a little bit. And it's going to be up to us as the player to navigate through all their stories and figure all of that out, which intrigues me. But that is available for PSVR.
I don't know if it's available anywhere else, but I'm going to jump into it and I'll probably report on it next week. So that's what's on the Panda docket. So if you're curious about it, you can go look at theinvisiblehours.com. That is the website for this particular game. And you could see what I'm buzzing about, because I'm very much buzzing about it.
Definitely. I mean, it sounds really interesting.
Like, I'm intrigued, because in most cases where, like, it's like a walking simulator later, like, you, like, with The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, which was, like, a glorified walking sim where, like, you're looking at the stories, or, like, the, you know, whatever happened to Edith Finch kind of deal, where you're interacting with things, but they're all kind of in the past. Whereas this is, you know, you're just watching all this stuff happen. I don't think you get to interact with things in the same way that you would expect the game to allow you to interact with it. I'm not too sure yet, but I'm curious to see it. And like I said, their narratives have always been very strong. I mean, it was very strong in the Sexy Brutale. And like, if I'm going to get that same type of attention from that here, I'm all for it. So I'll have more to talk about next week about that.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because, you know, it'll be interesting to hear about, I think, especially because I like hearing about somewhat scary and spooky things as a third party.
Without having to actually play them?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's my favorite. It's one of the reasons why I like watching people, YouTubers, do Let's Plays of spooky games, because I, from the comfort of not having anything rumbling in my home or having the ability to mute and or just simply skim through a video to see where all the jump scares are going to be, makes it so much easier for me to experience those things and like still sleep at night. So that's great. But I'll be really interested in hearing like what the gameplay is like and what your experience is with it. And it'll be very apropos, you know, for, you know, being Halloween and everything. So that about does it for this episode of the podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please make sure that you subscribe. You can get the podcast on our site, electricsisterhood.com. The links are right there on the front page. You can actually listen to an episode directly on our website, or you can get the links to subscribe to us in iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching out the Eshcast or using our links and subscribing, which will ensure that as soon as we put a new episode out on the web, you will grab it, which is typically late on Mondays. But be sure to subscribe so that way you won't miss an episode of the awesomeness that is Esh. And also while you're on our site, electricsisterhood.com, please make sure to check out all the other great content that all the content creators from our site and our family of sister sites create right there on our website. Bookmark it so that as soon as we put out new content, you can grab it. You can also get our RSS feed and put our feed into your favorite RSS reader of choice and get our new content the moment we put it out on the web. If you like what we're doing, then please make sure that you follow us and engage with us on our social. We can be found on Instagram at ESH News, Facebook, facebook.com/landofesh, and on Twitter at ESH News, where we're sharing all of our articles as well as the stuff that we're reading that we find interesting in the video game, comic book, and anime realm. Even some cosplay makes it in there, so definitely make sure that you're following us on all of our stuff, that you interact with us. If there's a question that you have or something that you'd love for us to check out and review on a show, then hit us up, slide into our DM, shoot us an email, hit us up on Facebook, whatever, however, whenever, we're listening. So just hit us up and be like, you guys should check out blah, blah, blah. And if we do, we'll give you a shout out on the show. If you like what we do here at Esh, then please make sure that you check out all the other content creator sites and the wonderful stuff that they're creating podcast and website wise. That starts with our homie KBD, King Baby Duck, over at B3Crew.com. He's got a bi-weekly podcast, No Borders, No Race, and is talking about anime, manga, music, some really great artists that you maybe have not heard of and some that you have, but definitely make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race, which you can find in iTunes as well as on his site, B3Crew.com, and his great content, as well as the other writers over at B3Crew.com. They're a fantastic sort. You should really check them out. Also, our man, HandsomeMan2049, with his site, SmashedRook.com, creating all kinds of wonderful live streams that he does every Wednesday night at 9 over on Twitch, twitch.tv/HandsomeMan2049. Make sure that you check him out. You can find the link for his streams earlier in the day, both on his site and social, as well as on our Facebook page. And like I said, typically Wednesdays at 9 Eastern is when you'll find his streams playing new games and old. You can jump into chat and be part of the show live. Definitely make sure that you check it out. one of my favorite humans on the planet, Phil the Issues Guy, with Phil's Recap and Review, my favorite recap show on YouTube. Please, please, please make sure that you check it out. It is absolutely a great time. You can find him at Phil's Recap and Review on YouTube. Subscribe, hit the bell so you get notifications. You can check out his archive of shows on his site, issuesprogram.com. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave, whether it's comic books or movies, anime, manga, video games, or more. If nerds are talking about it on the web, then the nerds over at nerdcrave.com are talking about it as well. So with that, it's time to call this podcast a wrap. As always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time.
Titties.